The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. To my left, everybody, Wyatt Tomchek in for the vacation, and Kelly Bidlin. There you go, Wyatt.
Very nice. I feel like I need to aggressively type as we're coming into.
Because that's Kelly's thing.
I just don't know what to do with my hands. So I'm like, I just feel like that's Kelly's thing of just like.
Let's just keep them so I can see where they are. That'd be my answer to that. Wyatt Tomchek with a review of WrestleMania 41 momentarily, ladies and gentlemen, because that was the agreement I made. If Wyatt was going to be here this week, he got to talk WrestleMania 41. So fresh off two appearances there. We will get to his review here momentarily on the show today. Carl Sack from KillerSports.com. Killer Sports. And Killer, what else is it? Killer Sports, and there's Killer...
Is it Killer Cappers?
Killer Cappers. It's all the killer stuff.
Yep.
He's also, of course, the brainchild. It was his brainchild to do the NBA contest that we're doing, the NBA Killer Sports Challenge, which in the early going, Steve Fezzik has gone out to an early lead. It's not a big news headline yet because no one's made the same amount of bets. You have to get 20 bets in the first round of the playoffs, so everybody staggered. But 5-1 start for old Fezzik.
How many?
He's a leader in the clubhouse.
How many texts did he send you over the weekend?
No, he wasn't bragging about it.
Oh,
he knows it's early.
Interesting. Okay.
He's just a Hall of Fame contest player.
He's like the leader round one at the Masters. It's nothing special.
Yeah, nothing special
okay.
right now.
Okay.
It's not even the first round, right? Yep. It's you know, very early stages of the first round. So we'll talk to Carl about the NBA playoffs. I'll give him a little 2.5-minute review of the NBA playoffs here momentarily thus far. Paul Sporer on baseball. We have adjusted season wins. We have awards, including manager of the year. We'll see if he has anything to say about that. That is available at a spot like FanDuel. Advocate Skirmish, as we used to call it here on the show. Wes Reynolds, part of the glue that holds this whole operation together. He was on Justin Thomas this weekend at the RBC. Justin Thomas breaking a 58 event, 3 years anyway, but I believe it's a 58 event drought. He wins his 16th PGA title, sinking a 21-foot putt on the first playoff hole. Andrew Novak was his competitor there, and Justin Thomas gets it done. Congratulations not only to Wes, but also to our own Kelly Bidlin in absentia today. Kelly Bidlin, I hope you tailed Kelly on this. Not only did he have Justin Thomas at 24-1, Wyatt, but he also had, it was a huge tourney for him, he had Daniel Berger, top five, 7-1. He had, I think his biggest bet was on Russell Henley, top 10, at plus 150. And then he had Sepp Straka, top 20. All of them get home for Kelly.
Is there a better spot to know that you won a ton of money and now you're in Turks and Caicos? Like,
the answer is no. There is not a better spot. He's doing it while looking out into light blue waters.
I've seen a couple of his pictures, and I was like, it's a well-deserved vacation for Kelly, but I'm very jealous right now.
Oh, I'm stupid jealous. And then later on the show, by the way, not to be outdone, Andy Molitor will join us. I mention Andy's name every week on the show when we have Drew Dinsick on, because Drew does the Deep Dive podcast with his buddy Andy Molitor. We don't have Andy on all that often, but today we do. We want to talk NFL draft because I think he and Drew did a great job last week on their podcast sort of headlining how they feel about the draft, at least as of last Thursday. We'll see how he feels about it, if it's the same this Monday morning, what he knows, what he doesn't know, what he's bet, what he's looking to bet. Because even in a draft where we don't know much, if that is still the opinion, there is a way perhaps to exploit this better than others. So we'll talk to Andy about that. The NBA playoffs, before we get to Wyatt's WrestleMania 41, which I know is the headliner here. The NBA playoffs in 2.5 minutes or less. All the game ones being played in all the respective series, and we'll just do them in chronological order. Indiana with a 1-0 lead over Milwaukee. This, by the way, the first eight games, there was one game of the eight that mattered in the last 2 minutes of the game and beyond. Obviously, that was Denver and the Clippers. The rest of these, well, some of them flirted with competitiveness. Others did not. The first one did not. Indiana beats your Milwaukee Bucks. Can I call them your Milwaukee Bucks?
Yeah, that's me, Ben Wilson, Nick Whalen's Milwaukee Bucks, and yeah.
All y'all.
That's about 20 minutes into the game. I was like, this is exactly how it was last year. No defense, Canada's shot to save their life.
But you don't have Dame yet, so, you know, there's that.
Dame did get a technical foul during the game.
Yeah, well, Dame's supposed to come back from the deep vein thrombosis. Pacers led by 24 at the half. They win by 19. Coast at 117-98. Siakam with 25. Then the only competitive one in the final moments. Denver takes a 1-0 series lead over the Clippers, best of seven. I know we have a lot of NBA hardos who are all over the Clippers. I'm not sure this did anything to dissuade them from their position, as the Nuggets and Clippers have game two tonight, two games in the association tonight, game two of both the Knicks, Pistons, and Nuggets-Clippers series. But this was the one where the Clippers led by 15 in the second quarter, 51-36. Nuggets closed the half on a 13-2 run, cut it to four, eventually tied it after many tries at tying it at 81. And then it was the Westbrook show, put back to put the Nuggets up for the first time, late 93-92. Then a layup to put him back up 95-94, then down 96-95 in the final 30 seconds. He hits a corner three, does Russell Westbrook. Pass from Jokic. Nuggets go up two. Harden with the layup in the closing seconds. And then Denver doesn't even get a shot off at the end of regulation. We go to overtime. A Christian Brown three put the Nuggets up four with just under a minute left. And then Westbrook with the big steal knocking it off Harden. That was what really put it away. But as far as the spread is concerned, and for those of us who had the Nuggets, I was doing a contrarian play in the challenge. I had the Nuggets minus the points. A Norm Powell three that didn't matter to the final score but mattered to the spread sunk my bet. So the Clippers get the money even though they don't win the game, and that's how game one was. Kawhi sort of fading down the stretch, just 4 points in the final 7:45 of regulation and overtime combined, 7 turnovers from him in that stretch, 20 turnovers in total for the Clippers, despite Harden scoring 32, Kawhi with 22, Zubats with 21. By the way, Kawhi with 7 total turnovers, not during that stretch. Jokic 29-9-12, Gordon 25-8, Murray 21-9-7. And even Westbrook with those 15 for the Nuggets in victory. Then it was the Knicks over the Pistons. That was a game where, again, game two is tonight, but the Pistons were up 8 late, late meaning fourth quarter, and then a 21-0 Knicks run. 21-0. It was the last time there was a playoff run of 21-0. I have no idea. But that was just unbelievable. The stage looked a little too big for the Pistons. It was a really strange ending as well, because the Pistons did get it back down to 6 with 1:23 left, but they couldn't have played it worse from there. Asar Thompson immediately committing a foul, and then the Knicks just sort of cruised. Didn't feel like the Pistons thought they had a chance. Very strange ending to that game after the 21-0 run. Brunson with 34 in victory. Minnesota then, and maybe the surprise blowout of the weekend, Minnesota blows out the Lakers to take a 1-0 lead. Lakers were up 7 after the first quarter, then the T-Wolves outscored them 38-20 in the second to go up 11. They scored the first 11 points of the second half, and it was kind of KD bar the door from there. So that's a 1-0 series. Again, we'll get to all these with Carl, which he was most surprised by. By the way, the reason I go through this, teams that take a 1-0 lead in the NBA playoff series, of all of them, they go on to win the series 77.8% of the time, just attaching a number to it. And then yesterday, OKC over Memphis by 51. In a game that they led as many as 56, the question was, how much would they adjust the line? Not much. A point and a half. Boston, then, after trailing the Magic by 1 at halftime yesterday, they run out. We're already up double digits 4.5 minutes into the third quarter. Go on to win by 17. Cleveland wins by 21 over the Heat in a game where it was a 7-point game with under 8 minutes to play. Just ran them out 28-12 down the stretch. And then the Warriors-Rockets, for those who missed it yesterday, interesting game. Warriors got up to a 23-point lead. Rockets got it all the way back down to 3, and then the Dubs just sort of closed it out late, ending up winning by double digits. So, by the way, that was a game where neither team got to 100. The stat on TNT inside the NBA last night, 30 of 1,230 regular season games this year featured games where both teams did not get to 100 points. So that's the first of the postseason. So that was a rare thing, but we'll talk to Carl about all that. But now, ladies and gentlemen, WrestleMania 41 with Wyatt Tomczyk. You went both nights. Do we have a picture? Did you put the picture?
No,
in?
I didn't.
All right,
do
put
any
that
pictures.
Up later if you could.
I could, yeah.
It's amazing.
I was bombarding Gil with a bunch of text messages, and Gil, I can't repeat them on air, but he's just like, "Wow, this is a bunch of." I don't. He just, as he said, I don't get the. I just don't get it.
It's me. It's not you. It's me.
I will say, if you ever want to go to a wrestling event and do people watching, You'd have a blast.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
But it was so much fun. Just the experience to go to what is the most important wrestling show in all of America was something that I will remember for the rest of my life. Get to see some pretty good matches. Night one was so-so. Night two was a lot better. I did get to see Stone Cold, but not in the capacity that I thought it was going to be.
Meaning what?
I thought he was going to come out and interfere in the title match between Cody Rhodes and John Cena. He came out to just announce the attendance. He had a little bit of trouble. He missed the ramp to go up. He drove an ATV. He missed the ramp, so he had a bunch of people trying to back it up. And then he's going around the ring, and he hit the barricade. He knocked a fan over, and the fan felt like Saquon Barkley, like trucked her. She was so upset. She goes, "What are you doing?" And at the end of it, you could see the president of the WWE trying to talk to her. He's like, "Please don't sue us."
And this was real?
Yeah, he didn't mean to crash the ATV.
Okay. So, and John Cena wins the title.
John Cena wins the title. He wins his 17th title, breaking the record with Ric Flair, his final WrestleMania. Just kind of cements himself as probably the GOAT of WWE.
And you said you'll remember this for the rest of your life?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. me and a buddy went. I had a couple moments where I jumped out of the seat and was cheering very loud.
Yeah.
One of them being Joe Hendry was a surprise.
Oh, sure. Joe Hendry.
Yeah, yeah. If you say his name, he will appear. Well, he did appear at WrestleMania. So it was that got
in the
a big
studio?
Pump.
I just said his name. Is he here?
Maybe he's in Vegas, you know. But
yeah.
I wish there was a third night.
Wish there was a third night?
I wish there was a third, fourth. It was just, I can't say it enough. It was a ton of fun.
Wow. You are. You love this stuff. Logan Paul won.
Logan Paul did win. That was got a lot of boos, but I think he's the right call.
Yeah. Okay. Hope it was everything it was cracked up to be. Maybe not night. No. Maybe not night number one.
Night one was, but night two definitely saved it.
By a Tom check. WrestleMania 41. I'm sure Wes will have thoughts later as well. Coming back.
VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NBA playoffs are here, and so is the VSIN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge. We've invited 15 sharp minds for the world of VSIN and Killer Sports to go head-to-head, making 38 picks each from the start of the playoffs all the way through the NBA Finals. We did the math for you. That's a total of 570 NBA playoff picks, all available to VSIN Pro subscribers. Picks are locked in 1 hour before the first game each day, so you'll have fresh insights to guide your bets every step of the postseason. And right now, you can get full VSIN Pro access through August 1st for just $59. Don't miss this playoff edge. Head to VSIN.com/subscribe to sign up today. And as I mentioned earlier, Steve Fezzik jumping out to the early lead in this with a 5-1 record. Alex Christensen at 4-1, followed by Kyle Akins at 3-0. JVT 3-1, because he got the Norm Powell shot to go. Carl Sack himself at 3-1. Carl Sack trying to win his own contest here. And Scott Raquel at 3-3 as well. They are in the lead early. Fezzik 5-1, doing his thing. We have Carl Sack here momentarily. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I want to get to some of these first real quick. Dan Groeschel, Kelly takes a vacation to Turks and Caicos. Last week I was on quote-unquote vacation with the kids at Disney World. I'm only a lot jealous of his vacation. Me too, Dan. Michael Harrison, Gil, after seeing the NBA and NHL scores this weekend, are the haves and have-nots becoming more of a thing? Since the college football playoff, it seems that favorites are just blowing away their opponents at a very high rate across all major sports. Well, Michael, that's why I go through it real briefly at the top here. Because it was largely a kind of ho-hum first weekend in the NBA playoffs. Though I'm sure there are going to be those that, take away from it. Well, one, the Timberwolves-Lakers blowout wasn't necessarily what they saw coming. And also in games like the Pistons-Knicks and obviously the Warriors-Rockets, maybe there would have been a different outcome had things sort of gone differently at the very end. But really the only one competitive, Clippers-Nuggets at the end, and we'll get Carl's thoughts here on that momentarily. Last name Nash, we better get an opening segment recap of WrestleMania. Wyatt has more to say. He's going to say more in a bit. Ryan Hyatt, Dear Gil, what part of Florida in absentia is Kelly under? A hurricane watch there? I'll hang up and listen. Yeah, I'm not sure. I hope everything's okay. Usually has bad inclement weather wherever he goes on vacation. And Mike Rouse, are we going to discuss the NBA award finalists, especially Defensive Player of the Year? Yes! We must, as we bring in Carl Sack from Killer Sports and KillerCappers.com, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Carl, I'm just going to read these. So MVP, Giannis is a finalist along with SGA and Nikola Jokic. You would expect that. Rookie of the Year, Stephon Castle with Zachary Risacher and Jalen Wells. Okay. Sixth man, Peyton Pritchard is in there with Malik Beasley and Ty Jerome. Ty Jerome, by the way, going off, assisting or scoring the first 24 points of the fourth quarter for the Cavs yesterday. But the real shocker, as Mike Rouse alludes to, is Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know if it's a shocker, but it is the one that raises eyebrows for those of us who bet. Draymond, Evan Mobley, Dyson Daniels, no sign of Dort or SGA from OKC. Are you a little surprised by that at all? I know you're not an awards guy necessarily.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, there's so many guys that I feel like there's a lot of guys that you could really make the argument for. I mean, even Drew Holiday is a lockdown defender. And the Celtics were one of the top defensive teams this year. So I haven't dug into this to this category very much. Off the top of my head, I probably lean towards Mobley, actually. But, I don't know.
Yeah, Coach of the Year, Atkinson, Bickerstaff, Udoka, no surprise there. Most Improved, Cade Cunningham, along with Dyson Daniels and Zubats. And Clutch, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, and Nikola Jokic. No Trae Young on that list for Clutch Player of the Year. That might surprise some folks. Okay, what surprise? You had a good weekend, I know, betting-wise. The Lakers' first half was the only thing that didn't come home for you. Everything else did, as I recall. Is that the one? Is that the answer to the question of what surprised you the most, the Lakers being so listless?
Yeah, definitely. They started off, they played a good first 10 minutes of that game, but the second quarter really went south and continued to go for the rest of the game.
It was a, you know, it's one of those things, though. I'm not sure if you saw this in your underlying numbers at all, that the Lakers, when they had that tremendous stretch towards the end of the regular season, they really were kind of the beneficiaries of some good three-point luck on the other side. Did you notice that as well, that maybe that regression was bound to happen at some point? Who knew that it would happen in game one with the T-Wolves? But did you see that when you were analyzing it?
Yeah. I think JBT actually pointed that out on his show maybe three, 4 weeks ago. It's a good observation by him.
T-Wolves shot 50% from behind the arc, set a playoff franchise record with 21 made three-pointers in that game. So eventually their opponent was going to go off, and that's what happened on Saturday. Let me ask you this. OKC beats Memphis by 51. Obviously, no one saw a 51-point win coming, led by as many as 56. But the spread in Game 1 was 13, if I'm not mistaken. Consensus. And you ask yourself, or at least I did, okay, they win by 51. What's the adjustment on a game two spread to something like that? Not from your perspective, but what's the market going to do? And the answer is about a point and a half, 2 points. Was there anything you saw in that game or anything in your analysis that would tell me not to bet a sweep here?
No. No, I would. I think that's the most likely scenario at this point, certainly.
And is that adjustment nearly enough? Like, is this just going to get bet up between now and tip off for game two?
I think it is. I am eyeing betting OKC in game two. Oftentimes, you get teams to make adjustments and bounce back in game two, but I think that happens more often in series that are potentially going to be competitive. Like the Clippers game tonight, I would expect them to make some adjustments that are tangible. In this matchup, I just have it so far off, especially with Wells being out, Brandon Clark being hurt earlier in the year, the way Memphis has been trending, the differential in rest. There's just so many things coming into this series that I don't think that this line is going to close any lower than 14.5.
Yeah, I mean, that was my immediate reaction was, for those of us who had OKC minus the points, I know you did. If you had them in game one, what would ever prevent you from playing them auto again here, game two, with very little of an adjustment? And you've just confirmed that for me right now. I just, even if you didn't have them, why wouldn't you jump in? It was an unbelievable sort of display of dominance in that game. And SGA didn't even play that great right on top of it. To add to that, it wasn't really a great performance by him, relatively speaking. About tonight, though, let's start with the Clippers and the Nuggets, which is the marquee matchup of the two games tonight. You did not have a play in game one. This has shifted from the Nuggets being a short favorite to now the Clippers being a short favorite, despite the fact that Denver did win game one in overtime. Is there a play for you on the side, or is this still a stay away?
It's tough because this line closed Denver by 2.5 in game one, and now you're looking at Clippers by 1.5. So it's a 4-point shift. And I would lean towards the Clippers playing better than they did last game. But with that much of a move, it's hard to back them. It would be Clippers or pass for me. As a Nuggets fan, that was such a great game to watch. And I don't know if I can watch five or six more of those games. Man, what a great game.
I mentioned a couple things about game one, and I guess maybe this is part of it, which is this likely to happen again? Is it likely for the Clippers to have 20 turnovers? Is it likely for Kawhi to only score 4 points in the final 7:45? He had 7 turnovers himself. Is it likely that they won't be able to maintain a 15-point lead again if they got up that high? So I guess it's a bunch of those things.
Yeah, I know. I don't think any of those things are necessarily likely. I would like to think that Denver makes some adjustments as well, though. You know, like, it just seemed like so many times Westbrook is pushing the ball when he's down, like he's on a breakaway and he's at 1-on-3, 2-on-4, pushing the ball to the rim. you know, Adelman mentioned it after the game, and gosh, I hope that he's conscious enough to not do that, but we'll see. You know, that's kind of Westbrook. You know, he's just got one motor.
He's got one motor. The decision-making is often not good, and yet he had huge plays in game one. Anything with the Knicks and Pistons? I know you didn't have anything in game one. Anything on this one? Right around the same spread of 6 here.
I would look at the I'm waiting on the Isaiah Stewart injury. You know, things really changed in that game in the fourth quarter. When he got hurt early in the fourth, I believe it was. And he's a really good defensive player, and that game totally turned when he left. And so I'm going to keep an eye out on that injury. I think if he's out, maybe over is the way to go here.
Maybe over. 220.5, by the way, spread. We're showing 6.5, I should say. 220.5 on the spread right now. So Carl monitoring that through the day, staying off the Clippers and the Nuggets for now. Carl, thank you. Appreciate it, man. And thanks for doing this contest. We love it.
Oh, I'm having a great time. Thanks for being a part of it.
VSiN.com/challenge, also for anybody who wants to follow along the standings. Baseball with Paul Spohr next, right here on The Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
SharpPlays.com, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, alerts directly from the pros. We invite you to check it out, SharpPlays.com. Skill Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek in for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beating the Book, always appreciated. Primetime, Cowboys_Cubs1, yo. Hey, man. I was with you on the Nuggets -2.5. Followed that beauty up by having Damon Inkrause bogeyed last 3 holes to lose by 1, and had Scotty T5 joining McNeely and Harmon as losers in golf. Gambling is fun. Hopefully, Paul Molitor's twin, Andy Molitor, won. We'll find out a little later when we talk NFL draft with him. And then Scott, New York Mets 16, says, no thoughts to Wyatt on Rollins Heyman? Would have loved to have heard what Gil thought if you mentioned the return of the man who is a woman. LOL. So there's that. And then we get, Las Vegas 514. Yo, young Wyatt, enjoy your memories of WrestleMania, because when you get to Gills and I, in my age, you're going to be like, what the hell was I thinking? Which is consistent with some of the texts we get. Lou Finicaro, talking about my talk with you earlier, he goes, some of your most delicate and deaf interviewing ever, Gil. And Dave Ross, who hosts By the Books just before us, along with Jensen Lewis here on the network,
he says,
you deadpanning and being apoplectic about why the experience of WrestleMania was hysterical. Yeah, I have. Wyatt could be making up names for all I know. I have no idea.
Well, then to go back to the tweet, I just didn't have enough time to talk about the Rollins, Reigns, and Punk match, which was, I thought, probably the best match of the entire card. And I called the screw job that happened, so I felt very proud of myself.
What's the screw job that happened?
Paul Heyman decided to hit both Roman Reigns and CM Punk in the Family Jewels.
Oh, you can't do that.
Aligned with Seth Rollins. Boom, big heel turn, big swerve. I mean, it was cinema.
Heel turn and swerve, technical terms for the wrestling folks?
Yes, heel turn is when you become a bad guy.
No, I understand.
When Katie went to the Warriors.
Was there something else you wanted to say about the whole thing before we got on air, before that?
Well,
swerve.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I give credit. Allegiant Stadium, it was a beautiful event. How they put everything together is spectacular. But one thing I noticed, Gil, and I was talking about this, is we were way up in the nosebleeds. Man, if you have to, like, go to the bathroom or go get a drink, the rows are so tight. Like, if I slip and fall, I'm going down five rows.
And Allegiant.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I'm, like, sitting there, like, sorry. Like, please don't get mad at me, because hopefully I'm not kicking anything that's down on the ground.
Well, I'm glad you had a great time.
It was.
And I'm glad it was a great life experience for you.
It was worth the money, and I got to give credit to my buddy. He found a great parking spot. We parked at the Fairfield, that's a little bit south, right by the In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm.
Quote-unquote, we were In-N-Out.
That's the parking hack?
Yeah, well, you just paid for, I don't know, I think with parking, it was like $20.
The Wishnev special, as we like to call it on the Megapod.
So it was like, right. And I know the back roads in Vegas, so it was like, I didn't deal with any traffic at all.
This gentleman seems like he'd be a WrestleMania fan. He was as a child, but he says as an adult, he is not. It's Paul Sporer, ladies and gentlemen, at Sporer on Twitter, Sporer, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, joining us now to talk baseball. You are not a WrestleMania guy, right?
No, I'm no longer a wrestling fan, but...
Because you grew up...
Don't worry, Paul. If you got a couple minutes, I can get you back on it.
I grew up in the, you know, Hogan, Macho Man, Ultimate Warrior era.
That's a golden
era.
Greatly
enjoyed it. Got to go to an event at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit as a kid, which was wonderful. And I certainly don't throw stones at people that like it. I like plenty of very nerdy stuff. So everyone enjoy your own nerdy stuff.
That's right.
Wrestling's just not for me.
That's right. Well said, Paul. We all have our things. Yours just happens to be a different kind of thing, Wyatt.
Everything baseball related, right? Like, I do remarkably nerdy stuff with baseball that people will look at me like, what are you doing? So that's why I don't throw stones from this glass house over here.
Well, that's true. If there's a baseball card show happening, like, you know, 10 miles away, I might go. So you're right about that. About baseball. Let's start with adjusted. Well, before we do that, let's start with your DFS, because we always sort of push you up against a wall with that. We have a Patriots Day game in Boston happening here in about 25 minutes. Give us a DFS look today. What do you got?
By the way, that game is always crazy, right? You never know how guys are going to react to it. Famously, Lucas Giolito pitched in it, not a morning person by his own admission, you know, late night video game type. Got absolutely clobbered in it. So we'll see today if either Walker Buehler or I want to say Jonathan Cannon, if either of them are morning guys, because that is a very early game.
Today's
an interesting board.
I went in 1990. I went to a Brewers 18-0 victory over the Red Sox on Patriots Day, to your point. 18-0.
So none of that team was a morning person, very clearly. By the way, I might go against Buehler in that, not because he's not a morning person, but because he's just not pitching very well. He's got a couple good starts in a row, but they're surface level good. I'm just not seeing it with him. If it was any other team but the White Sox, I'd have a bit more confidence in it. But the pool today it isn't super deep in terms of great pitchers. You know, you love Schwellenbach. St. Louis, capable offense. They've been hitting pretty well, but I like Spencer Schwellenbach for sure. Hunter Brown against Toronto again. Competent team with some good players there, Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette and the like, but I like Hunter Brown against Toronto. And then Nick Lodolo coming off of a paternity leave there. Congratulations to him becoming a father. I think for the first time, I actually have no idea. I'm just guessing there, but he's going to Miami and that team is terrible. I know they have a 9-12 record, which is halfway decent for what Miami is, but they cannot hit for anything. So I'm looking at the top pitchers today because there's only a few of them, and I think I'm just going to play it safe with the pitching.
I like your you predicted whether a baseball player had more than one child, and then you recognized while you were doing it, you're like, I probably have no idea when you're, which is interesting, because
what am I talking about?
Charles Barkley on Inside the NBA, the post game last night, Billy Ray Bates, an old ball player, came up on a graphic, and on air he goes, "Is he even still alive?" And he's not. And he's not. And it was very awkward. It was very awkward for about 30 seconds. Yeah, just maybe off air. Ernie even said, he goes, "Maybe you should ask that off air."
Oh, that was a good Ernie.
Oh, my God. Thank you very much. Okay, adjusted season win totals. Adjusted season win totals. This is obviously, look, we're 20 games into the season, roughly, right? We're an eighth, you know, was that an eighth of the way through the season. So it's not much, but we do have the opportunity to look at some of these, and you are not necessarily locked into that betting market. So you're actually a good sort of, you know, person to ask this because you have a perspective where you're not too close to the sun. Was there any of these that, that jumped off the page for you? These are available, by the way, this morning at FanDuel.
Yeah, obviously you want to be careful, and you should probably be still staying pretty anchored to your preseason thoughts. But with that in mind, it gives you an opportunity to maybe play some overreactions. And, you know, I would pretend that I'm just great at segues and that I mentioned a couple teams earlier because I was going to mention them here, but that's just dumb luck there. But Miami and the White Sox are two teams that I'm looking at in opposite directions. Again, I think Miami, they're 9-12 right now. I think that would pace to what, like 68, 67 wins. I think they're terrible. I like them under their 62.5 still. You know, that's a team, and I've said this about the White Sox, so I'll bring them in right now. I like them over the 51.5 because I think they're going to go different ways here. I think Miami is a team that's going to trade some of their very few decent parts that they have. Chief among them, Sandy Alcantara, of course. Now, Max Meyer will stick around. That's a great young pitcher. He actually goes today, too, I believe, against Cincinnati. And I really do like him, but they have no hitting whatsoever. I don't think they have great reinforcements coming. So I like them to go under 62.5. Meanwhile, the White Sox over 51.5, I think they go the other way. Sure, they might trade some veteran pieces off to, you know, anybody for whatever they can get, but they're going to be adding minor leaguers throughout the season. They've already done it with Chase Mydroth and Edgar Caro. They're going to add many more as the season goes. I think this team just gets better. Still a crappy team. Let me be clear. Still a bad team. Still last in that division for the White Sox, but more of a 60-something win team. 51.5 just feels really light, and we're seeing that maybe some of those teams in the Central aren't as strong as we thought. Minnesota, Kansas City, I'm looking at you. And so if White Sox can start to pick up some wins against those clubs, then maybe their road becomes easier. So I like them at 51.5 on the over end. Colorado, too, another team I think that we're overreacting to. Now, I don't see them necessarily getting better, but 49.5 is a pretty crazy number. I know part of it is because of the division they're in, and they could be this year's White Sox. They're 4-17. But I think they'll matriculate into the 50s, maybe even into the low 60s, because they often do, right? We've seen wretched Colorado teams before. We've never seen them winning just 49 games. So over 49.5 for Colorado, I like that. Houston over 85.5, difficult division. I picked Texas to win it. So I have no problems with that, but I think this Houston team just kind of treading water as the early part of the season goes. Remember last year they had that terrible start and had to rally. This year they're not going to have to do that, I don't think, and then they're going to take off in the summer. And then the last one is the Dodgers under 106.5. Where are they winning 106.5 from? First off, are they going to try hard enough to do that? I don't think that they should. Well, why expend that sort of energy? Secondly, they're in a division with four teams that have 13 wins right now. I don't see where they're winning 106.5. I got the Dodgers on the under.
Steve Fezzik's head might have exploded. Although I think Steve went under on 106.5. Even he didn't go crazy on 106. He thinks they will get to 100. I thought you were going to go the other way when you started with Miami and Chicago. I thought you were going to go the opposite direction. I thought you were going to go over on Miami and under on Chicago. So you surprised me there. Interesting to look at. Again, those are often up and down at random times for books.
Right.
This morning, anyway, they were up at FanDuel, but check them out or look for them at other books as well. More with Paul Spohr, who's kind enough to join us for two this morning on Patriots Day. Coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your betting to a whole nother level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream, or the road to the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wages for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. Just want to read this tweet from Gibby, because I can relate. He said, Gil, I learned a lesson on Friday. One should not come home from outpatient Achilles surgery and fire off random bets while under the influence. Lesson learned. Looking forward to listening to the show while I recover. Oh, man, I hope you recover very quickly. Let me guess. Basketball. That'd be my guess. Pitt Panther Gibb there with the ruptured Achilles. Hope he's doing okay. What else happened in sports this weekend? Oh, Iga lost to the Hamburger for the sixth time. Yelena Ostapenko, who was taking on Sabalenka in the Stuttgart finals this morning. I don't know if they played it already. Did they play it already? Time zone issues. Let's see. Did they play it? They did. And Yelena Ostapenko, the Hamburger, wins Stuttgart. She beats Aryna Sabalenka. So she, that's the other thing with Iga. When she loses, she tends to lose to the eventual title winner. And in this case, it was Ostapenko who wins Stuttgart. On clay, Ostapenko herself, a former French Open champion back in 2017. But Iga against Swiatek, 500 or better against everybody else on tour. 0-6 now against that Hamburger. What are you going to do? Back to Paul Sporer here. And by the way, I don't know if there's an equivalent in sports to that. Someone who's the best or second best player in their sport who has this one thing they can't mentally get over. Someone will tell me an equivalent. Paul Sporer joins us once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, to talk Major League Baseball with us. Paul, you brought up the Dodgers. We bet into these monthly markets here, and we started doing this last year. Last year, there was like great success, and there was great drama when we lost. This, the seventh, as I mentioned, was my worst of all of them. I had the Twins this month. Good God, what was that all about? So they're not even close. They're closer to the bottom than they are the top, quite frankly. But right now, with... what is that? 10 days left in the month of April. This is March, April in some markets, April exclusively in others, at other books. It is the Padres at 16-6 and the Dodgers at 16-7. Padres were a 28-1 pre-flop shot on this. Dodgers were the short shot. They were not a sexy play. Followed by the New York Metropolitans at 15-7 and the San Francisco Giants and the Yankees, both at 14-8. The Giants were 84-1 to win this. Yeah. I'm just watching it from afar. I can't wait for the May numbers to come up. And I'm now doing that gambling thing where I'm rooting for the Dodgers to win it so that I don't feel bad about not betting anybody else, because there was no world in which I was going to bet on the Dodgers.
No, of course, because they were going to be the mega favorite, and that way you're like, yeah, I was never going to get there anyway. By the way, I just want to be clear. You know tennis so well that you know somebody's nickname is Hamburger.
No, I made that up. It's not her nickname. That's okay. What I call her. Yeah.
But you're nerdy enough about that, but then you're making fun of people's wrestling takes.
Okay? That's exactly right.
Sure, that's where we're at here, is that you're that deep in tennis, making up nicknames. Okay, I'm just making sure.
I resemble that remark. It's what I do.
Anyway, with regards to the Dodgers, yeah, they might win it here this month, and obviously you wouldn't feel bad about that because that's a team that you're not going to get in on. But again, just kind of going back to the first segment there, I don't really see the avenue to a buck 06, right? Because again, you have to kind of put pressure to do that too. You have to try, and it's not that they're going to coast through and not try to win or not put out their best players. But how hard do they really have to expend their energy just to make sure that they get to October, you know? And even if they are trying, is 106 really doable in a division where there's four winning teams right now, two of which were predicted at the beginning of the year? Arizona, San Diego had plenty of heat. And the Giants, who, you know, they do this, right? They do this. They come up, they overperform. And I'm not so sure that they don't have a little bit of staying power. And I say that, Gil, as you very well know, as a longtime Giants hater, not an actual hater, but as somebody who never fully believes in them, like the year that they popped off for their 100 plus win season, I was a bit skeptical until the very end. But as somebody who's skeptical on them, I'm looking at this Giants team and I think they have some viability. So when you pair that with the Padres Diamondbacks, I just don't see where you're getting the buck 06.
By the way, back to the Dodgers for a second. If you want a recommendation, Apple TV has a Dodgers docuseries about them winning the World Series last year. So if you enjoy like watching the Yankees commit three errors in a half an inning, in a frame of an inning, in dramatic musical fashion, I would recommend that highly to you. The thing about the Giants, it triggers this in my head. You're looking at the AL and the NL right now.
Right. The
AL's best run differential team is the Yankees at +30. Just to give you an example, you know, the Mets and the Giants are plus 30. You have the Padres at plus 35. You have the Cubs at plus 41. What we're seeing is a bit of a difference early on between National League prowess and American League prowess. Is that a thing, or is that just an early season, you know, small sample thing?
I don't think it is necessarily early season, because, again, I think this is something that we saw coming into the year a bit, and it's playing out early. Again, if it was just – if it was completely counter to what we thought 2-3 weeks ago, I probably wouldn't be in on it. But there was already inklings of this and even full-out discussions of it, like, hey, the National League is much better than the American League for this, that, and the other reason. And, again, we are seeing it play out completely. You know, I love my Tigers. Everyone knows that. But they're tied for the second most wins in the American League. Like, that's crazy. And it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They'd be the sixth best team in the National League, tied with the Diamondbacks and Phillies. Like, that is an easy microcosm of where we're at right now. And again, no shade to my Tigers, but are they a Titan right now? I don't think so. I think they're like one of those upstart sort of teams, and yet they're looking like a Titan in the American League because of the lack of depth right now. So, no, I believe the National League is a lot stronger, and that has to play into your win total bets for the National League, right? Because again, they start beating up on each other. I know that it's a more balanced overall schedule, but if you have all these good teams, they're going to start taking wins from each other, and it's going to be tough. And there's not as many bottom feeders. The Rockies are definitely bad, even though I think they can beat the 49.5 wins. Pittsburgh is too, but then it's the Braves and the Nats next. The Braves are expected to be a good team. They're kind of this year's Astros, where everyone is probably still waiting for them to flip the switch. And then the Nats, not playing super well, but they're a pretty interesting offense. That's still an offense that I like. So yeah, I find the National League a standard deviation or more better than the American League right
now. I like it. Standard deviation cashes as well on the show. By the way, Max Fried took a no-no into the eighth yesterday. 7-1 AL Cy Young. Interest you at all?
A bit. Certainly something. If I'm going anywhere for Cy Young right now or any of these awards, I'm going deeper on the board. You're not going to catch me getting any of the favorites right now. You got to play stuff that's a bit deeper if you're going to go here, because it's already a bit of a long shot. And if you get too caught up on, you know, 2-3 weeks, I think you're just asking, you know, maybe if you're doubling down on somebody you like. Listen, I was big on Fernando Tatis. The odds aren't good. I mean, he's the second favorite behind Shohei. But if you wanted to put more on that, okay, that's something. But other than that, I'm staying away from favorites unless I was already on them, especially in Rookie of the Year. I know you asked about Cy Young, but especially in Rookie of the Year right now, I'd be open to playing guys who aren't even up. I think Roman Anthony has just as good of a chance as anybody right now. Nick Kurtz for the Athletics, if he can hit the way people expect he can, he's a way better bet than teammate Jacob Wilson, who is the short shot in the American League right now. So, yeah, I think with these individual player awards, you shouldn't be going anywhere near the favorites. You're trying to cash something solid there. You know, don't go completely down the board and be like Paul Goldschmidt for AL MVP. No shade, but like, give me a break. But, you know, get in the middle of the board when you're going to go on those. I already don't love tying up my money into six-month award bets, but if I'm going to do it, I want to get a little cute with it. Half-unit type plays where there's a little bit more risk to it.
All right, that's good advice. Just for giggles here in our last 90 seconds then, there are some really rando ones that aren't available at every book, but again, we mentioned FanDuel earlier. They have manager of the year and they have reliever of the year. You took a look at these markets. Do you have any thoughts on those?
So when you're looking at the manager of the year, what I would probably do is, you know, again, they are being prisoners of the moment a bit. Bruce Bochy, AJ Hinch is at the top for the American League. Yeah. And again, my Tigers, but like, come on. And then you got Bruce Bochy there. I'm probably looking for those stable teams that are a bit lower down, right? I know you mentioned the Yankees. Booney's at plus 2,200. He's like 12th on the board here. It's boring. It's absolutely boring as hell, but I'd rather do something like that with Aaron Boone. I'd rather go Joe Espada plus 2,500. Houston, again, a team I'm still going to stay committed to. I'd rather go there. Terry Francona, that one's a little bit off the board a bit because Cincinnati, I don't think, is like a special team, but he's fifth on the board. But again, then I go back to Dave Roberts, Torey Lovullo. They're both plus 1,100. I'm going to stick to the teams that were expected to be great coming in. I'm not going to fall victim to the teams that are hot right now. Bob Melvin, AJ Hinch, near the top of their respective boards or at the top in Hinch's case. I don't want to play those right now because that's being prisoner of the moment, in my opinion.
Okay, I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, just for the record, Paul, I believe, compared Yelena Ostapenko to John Cena, I believe, right, earlier on the show. Yeah, one is filled with just histrionics and drama, and the other is John Cena.
Yeah.
the World Wrestling, whatever they're calling it now. Federation, whatever the E stands for. I have no idea, Paul. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care, Gil.
Paul Spore, everybody. At Spore. Fangraphs is where he does his thing. Sleeper in the Bus, the name of the podcast. Once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Wes Reynolds off another golf winner. Next.